Hi, this is On Location, Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane. I'm Sophia Lane, and I'm excited to share with you the second part of my recent conversation with Erin Torme, director of the Coastside Farmers Market and proprietor of Farm Vitales. If you've ever been or wanted to go to a farmer's market, or wondered how that diversity of farm products and craft goods can come together so beautifully, listen in and learn. I promise you'll be inspired by the power of what is possible when folks think big and team up. That's how I go to the farmer's market. And I'm like this euphoria comes over me to see all the farmers and all the produce and the greens and the different, you know, crafts and the prepared foods that come together. And to me, that's kind of like that same metaphor of when you have people and pieces and elements of nature and humanity working together, how you yield such abundance, right? Like those eggs wouldn't happen if all those pieces weren't together. The farmer's market wouldn't happen if you weren't coordinating all those pieces working together. And I feel like it's that same thing. So I'm curious, like, How did you do that? Like, how did you get from, like, you know, it's not like you just like buy a bunch of tents and set, you know,
no,
set them up in someone's parking lot and like invite some friends to come over. It's like, oh, there's so much more.
No, no. Farmers markets don't just happen.
Yeah.
They're created and they're co-created, and it's surprising how few people get that. I was fortunate enough to find my way into a community of people that were all sort of doing something similar at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier in the thing, my mom pointed out that I had a knack for serendipity.
Serendipity.
So I mostly
that's your superpower.
It is.
You need a cape put on the back of your flannel.
No, thank you.
S.
I need wings on the back of my tennies. I need jets on my tennies.
We could do that.
Basically, I started this, a very small endeavor, around the same time and met at around the same time Dee Harley, who was just starting her place, Ryan Casey, who was just kind of getting, used to be Blue House Farm, at the actual Blue House in Pescadero, and that's changed.
People know Harley from Harley Farms, which is the goats, right?
Yeah. There was a number of us that were all kind of roughly the same age. I think it was, you know, a few years older, but starting these kind of unlikely enterprises. And mine was quickly figured out that I was going to need to find a farmer's market and make this all work, because I was going to have to figure out how to pay for this place.
But
it was very difficult. The first farmer's market started on July 6th in 2002. That was our very first day. And it was
amazing.
At Satrala, and it was a relatively modest endeavor. But it was very surprising, the kind of the difficulty of getting it off the ground was surprising amount of resistance from the agricultural establishment. And then some help from some folks in there, too. There was and still is this perception that has changed a bit. But back when I got this all going, when people thought of Half Moon Bay and its agricultural contributions, it was artichokes, Brussels sprouts, and peas. And occasionally people thought about it in terms of Christmas trees, but the big idea was pumpkins. But the real driver for our agricultural economy out here was floriculture, which was a huge business, but very much changing during the late 80s into the 90s. It's very, it's one of those challenging and terrible paradoxes. The decline and the basic collapse of the floriculture industry in California is a direct result of the war on drugs. Because our country put tons of money into Colombia, farmers and from Colombia, Venezuela, Bolivia, to give them to counter the
incentive, right?
Correct.
To
counter these guys that really had nothing to grow or no economic power over the guys wanting them to grow pot and coca leaves for for cocaine or poppies and that kind of stuff. So suddenly Half Moon Bay used to produce some incredible amount. I'm going to say it's like 70% of the roses, chrysanthemums, house plants. Remember during the 70s?
Yes.
Everybody with their split leaf philodendrons growing all over their houses and spider plants everywhere and macrame.
Half Moon Bay, who knew?
Macrame hangers are all coming out of there. But it changed the floriculture industry. It devastated it.
Yeah.
Not just in Half Moon Bay, but everywhere else. And so then there was some of these different changes and, properties coming available and this sort of rise of the, the sort of educated hippie. I don't know really what
something.
It is. If you're my age, you grew up with like being like this generation that was like just learning about organic production and what that difference was and the difference between organics. And we were all kind of growing up at the age where it was made very clear what DDT was doing to our raptors, right? And people were very committed to making those changes. And in this area, there are some monsters in that field. Larry Jacobs is worth a freaking Google. That guy is
Larry
a powerhouse.
Jacobs
Farm?
Like
most people wouldn't connect Pescadero with Del Cabo tomatoes that are in every Trader Joe's all over the place. That's him.
Really?
That's him taking the technology and the knowledge and the passion that he had. He and his wife Sandy are just like, they're amazing people. Totally heroes. Live in Pescadero, had this farm, was growing culinary herbs forever. He liked to travel, so down he goes, just out of curiosity. There's a little town in Baja California Sur called Pescadero, El Pescadero.
Oh.
So he went down there to check this out.
Why not?
And if I have the story right, during that time, the Mexican government was doing its best to put the brakes on every gringo in this country going down and buying another piece of the Cape down there and turning it into another resort hotel or a drug disco.
Yeah.
So he, they were returning these to Mexican nationals, but it was sort of like a modern day homestead act.
Yeah.
Like you had to get it productive. You had a short period of time to do it in order for those communities to claim those places. So Larry and Sandy basically were here. They are in this cool little town just south of Todos Santos, and said, "Well, listen, we have this organic farm up in California in Pescadero. We know how to do this, right? Know how to grow things organically." He and Jim Cochran from Swanton Berry Farm is like the first, and I think still the only union run strawberry farm ever.
Oh,
like anybody tells you,
everyone
you can't
do drive up highway one.
It's one of those kind of cool things. So these guys are all from here, and you're watching
another
them
paragon
do what they do. I mean, he's a monster. So anyway, Larry and Sandy, they're like, "Well, here, we will, if you grow tomatoes and peppers for us, because we can't grow those in Pescadero, California. But we've got all these culinary herbs, and we have the market channels, and we have the technology, and we can help you with this." So
again, working together,
it was more just just like they said, "We will buy everything you can grow."
Yeah.
And get it, it up there into California, because California at the time wasn't growing a lot of tomatoes in the winter, and you can down there because they don't, they don't do the time change thing the way we do. Anyway, because the closer you get to the equator, the less of a thing that is day length hours. And closer you get, the less the impact is of day length. And day length is a huge thing with growing most crops, way more than the whole anything else. Anyway, fun and short of it. Now fly into the Cabo Airport, and there are big hangars that say Del Cabo, and they have their own fleets of planes that fly millions.
So it's literally Del
tomatoes.
Cabo. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you go to Trader Joe's.
Makes sense. It's Del Cabo.
and that is Jacob's Farm.
Oh,
that is their
work.
And they completely transformed the environment and the economy of that whole area.
Yeah.
You go down there now and there are like tons of gorgeous farm to table restaurants and these beautiful organic farms that are just like, providing incredible amount of economic opportunity for young growers. And then he took that same kind of idea and ethic to Tanzania, where they're doing a similar sort of thing.
Really? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he just got back and
he does like to travel.
He's a born teacher.
Yeah.
He's a maestro. He and Sandy both. I mean, I think Larry gets a lot of the headlines, but Sandy is something.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this aloud, but very strange how it seemed to be Larry's sort of rise and influence, and the rise and influence of a lot of these young organic or biointensive mm-hmm. or diversified farmers like myself, who are not generationally connected to yeah. this ground and area, were certainly highly suspect. And, you know, and there still remains some tension between us and the yeah. Farm Bureau and the agricultural establishment. But,
yeah,
I mean, most of us, are we're getting over it, you know. Yeah. And as we all get a little bit older, you start seeing, you know, different kinds of changes. But being a little bit more accepted and yeah. a little less, you know.
Yeah, different.
Somehow
yes,
conflict-inducing.
Yeah,
but it was very strange.
Progress can be hard in a community to kind of yeah. take the old ways and adapt them in ways that really would benefit everyone, but can feel kind of a little bit scary, you know.
Change is the only constant. And
yeah,
that's, I think, that for several of us, we were just at a retirement dinner for this guy, Jim Howard, that we all really love. And we were just talking about how, like, I've always found it surprising that as a farmer, you deal with change every day. You know, it's just every single day grown a little older
yeah.
or gotten a little weirder looking, or
yeah.
or the you think the weather's going to be one thing and it's something else, and so changing and adapting yeah. to those changes and adapting to those changes. I mean, it's just something that's kind of in your bones, and if it's not, you're going to not have a successful enterprise. So it always surprised
yeah.
me how much resistance
there it
was.
It seems by nature
to certain kind of changes, and I was like, oh dear.
Yeah.
But at any rate, that's a long way around the barn. But the fact of the matter is that I could not get into any of the farmers markets that existed at the time
yeah.
because they didn't feel like I had enough. And
yeah.
I wasn't sure I did either.
Yeah.
And so in talking to, there was a young man, I can't remember his name, but he had Parisma Greens. Jason had Parisma mm-hmm. Greens up on Higgins Canyon. Some of the early folks that I spoke to were the Giustis.
Yeah.
And old Aldo Giusti was one of my allies in the Farm Bureau,
yeah.
where I Aww. Had some resistance from other folks
yeah.
involved there.
Yeah.
But Aldo said, you know, the problem with you, you got two problems. You got a problem with the alphabet, for one thing. And I was looking at him like, what do you mean by that? And he goes, if you came from the Donellos instead of the O'Donnells, you'd be in better situation
yeah.
here.
And I know, it's Irish Ridge.
And then he also said the biggest problem is that it was your idea, not theirs.
Yeah.
And he says, I can see you have an idea and a vision.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to get the support of the Farm Bureau, just do it.
Yeah. Just do it
and
anyway.
So,
fascinating. Good to have Aldo,
yeah.
Help coach you through that and just really encourage you, do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, it was a very short conversation,
yeah.
but
yeah.
he said, you know, go talk to John and Maureen and see what they say. So,
yeah.
So, you know, the Giustis were kind of early, you know, adopters. And the cool thing about that, what's been really great, like we just have, you know, this year is particularly fun for me because, you know, I kind of see myself as trying to figure out my exit strategy
yeah.
here for my own fine self,
because yep.
I just have to sign up for Medicare.
Yeah.
The hell. is that, you know, the Giustis have been with us since day one.
Yeah, I remember.
And there are
that.
Kids running those stands
yep.
now that were not on this planet
nope.
when we first started.
I remember
that.
I remember.
And it's been something that's been really so gratifying
that.
For
yep.
me, is to watch these like, there's a number of them. I won't out anybody on you know, live, but there are a number of people who come to the market now that were raised in it.
Yes.
Whose parents met there.
Yes.
That's you know?
Beautiful.
And it's like the great thing and the beautiful thing about it, but it's also really the challenge right now. Because
yeah.
I think right now, market's nearly 25 years old, and there's a whole lot of people new to the town or have just never experienced
yeah.
Half Moon Bay without a farmer's market
yeah.
and have no idea what it takes to make them happen. Or because they don't just happen.
No.
It's crazy the amount of regulation.
So
I mean, you're dealing with people's food.
Yeah.
And it's stuff they put in their bodies. And food has been known, especially in this town, we have to be really mindful
yeah.
and like keep in mind our history of it.
Yeah. On Location, Coastside Edition with Sophia Lane is produced by Bright Now Media. Stay tuned for our next episode coming soon. And thanks for listening.